Coming today on Breaking Free, a modern divorce podcast.
Every single person who walks into a divorce lawyer's office has their own notion of what should be fair.
Welcome to Breaking Free, a modern divorce podcast with Rebecca Zung and Susan Guthrie.
This is the place to hear other people's stories, to learn from the top experts in every related field, to also have some fun, laugh, and hang with two divorce attorney girlfriends who are also top family law litigators.
Breaking Free Mediation is proud to be the very first family law mediation centers in the country to offer a mindfulness track. Breaking Free Mediation, helping you resolve family law matters peacefully. Learn more at www.breakingfreemediation.com.
Also, make sure to download your free calming meditation from renowned meditation and energy expert Scott Picard at www.breakingfreefromdivorce.com/free meditation.
And now we invite you to listen to today's show.
It's going to inspire you to transform and break free.
Welcome to today's podcast. Our topic today is It's Not Fair, Divorce Law versus Divorce Justice. I'm Susan Guthrie.
And I'm Rebecca Zung. And today's topic is actually near and dear to my heart because any of you who've read my book or seen me on different shows or heard me talk in the past have known that I've talked about this notion, or even if you were one of my former clients, you heard this, you heard me say this.
My clients have certainly heard this.
And I've said this many times, which is there's a huge difference between divorce law versus divorce justice. And really the first part of what this episode is called is It's Not Fair is something that every divorce attorney has heard many, many times. And, the thing is that there's a huge difference between what people think should be fair, which is what the justice part of what this is, this conversation is, and what is actually what the law is, because the law wasn't designed to mete out justice.
Divorce court, it's a little different than maybe in a criminal court where you're seeking justice for a wrong. Family law, court is not based upon that type of a legal premise, right?
No. Yeah. I mean, so we go through like the four main areas of every divorce. And I kind of thought that that's what we would sort of talk about, The four main areas being the property settlement, which could be community property or equitable distribution, depending on the state that you're in, spousal support, parenting plans, and child support. And child support is probably the easiest thing to do in every state because there's guidelines. But then in the child support conversation, there's all sorts of tangential things where things can be not fair again.
Usually the amount the child support guidelines call for has nothing to do with what it actually costs to raise children.
Yeah.
It's a function of the incomes of the parents. So right there is a good example of where the law provides a certain number based upon a calculation. But certainly, how many times have you heard a client say, that's all I'm getting in child support? That's not fair. That doesn't have enough to, give me enough money to raise my children.
Right. Or how come, I have all the overnights and, I'm not getting enough in child support? Or if it's 50-50, why do I still have to pay child support? Because you make $500,000 and the other person makes $50,000. If the overnights are divided in half, it doesn't mean that there's not going to be any child support. This is something that you and I have talked about maybe doing this show for a while because, every single person who walks into a divorce lawyer's office has their own notion of what should be fair based on all sorts of things, you know? Yeah. I mean, the thing is that the law doesn't really take a look too much, as we talked about in our Bet You Didn't Know That Adultery Can Bite You in the Ass episode. The law doesn't really look too much at the cheater or the abuser or, you know, those kinds of things.
Yeah. I mean, those can be factors that may be taken into consideration, but in your great preponderance of divorce cases, it's a much more practical matter of how are we going to divide out this couple's finances? It's like a business transaction. And the court doesn't get into looking at who was the bad guy or making determinations. And that's really hard for a lot of clients or a lot of people going through divorce to accept, because they walk through the door thinking, well, I've been done wrong and I'm going to be made whole in some way by the court, by this judicial system. And it's a huge shock to find out that, nope, it's really going to be that you're going to walk out with what, you know, about half probably. And, you know, there are certain formulas that come into play that are just going to set the numbers, like child support. And the judge is really not there to make a determination that your spouse was a bad person. I mean, certainly there are those cases, right? I mean, you get a Tiger Woods type case and you might get a judge who would look at it.
But the judge doesn't really have the discretion to go too far afield from what the law is. I mean, and that's the problem. You know, the judge may hate the person's guts for whatever reason, or think that the person is a complete, you know, scoundrel, but they have to just apply the law. That's their job.
Right. Well, but there are states, you know, Connecticut, where I practice, both in the alimony statute as well as the property division statute, the judges are given a number of factors that they are supposed to consider in determining what is equitable, what is a fair, you know, division, or what's the fair amount of alimony. And one of the factors, in Connecticut anyway, is who was more at fault for the breakdown of the marriage. So
they can have a little bit of discretion, but they can't just go, oh my God, you are awful, I'm giving you 100% of the assets. I mean, it may mean like a slight unequal distribution. I think
Cases, yeah, where you shock that we've talked about it before, shock the judicial conscience, right? It's not your, oh, he cheated on me, or, oh, she, you know, she spent too much money, or she did this or that. You know, it's really those cases that are so extreme where the judges, because you have to remember, we've talked about this, judges sit there every single day and hear divorce cases come through the door. And in every divorce case, or a majority of them, one of the partners has cheated, or one of them has decided they don't want to remain married for whatever reason to the other one, and so has broken the promise, as so many people see it. They promise to love me and be married to me and be a partner with me forever, and they're breaking that promise. They're breaking up our family. And, you know, that's not really how the law looks at it. The law looks at it as people find themselves changing, or that they're no longer, what do we call it? Irreconcilable differences. You know, they've changed, they don't want to be together anymore. And so we're going to let them part ways and help them do that by helping them divide out their stuff and figure out how they're going to parent. But it's not really, as Rebecca said, not really from a perspective of punishing a person for saying, this is no longer the relationship that I want to be in.
Right. And the other thing that people, that the judges don't look at and people have a hard time with is, you know, let's say one parent was sort of the primary caretaker. He's never given the child a bath. He's never fed him a meal. He's never picked him up from school. He's never even been to the school, you know, all of those kinds of things. But then dad shows up and wants 50-50 or at you know, any time sharing at all. He's going to get it, or she's going to get it. And the judge will just say, he can learn, he can start now.
So I've heard that many, many times in a courtroom, Yeah. He can learn how to change a diaper, or she can, you know, learn how to do homework with the kids or whatever that is. Parents can, you know, when people separate out their households, things have to change. That's just a fact of life. It's not going to be the same. And a judge will expect and give a parent an opportunity to step up and be.
It's really no different than if one spouse paid all the bills during the marriage. Well, okay, now that you're dividing up the household, the other spouse is going to have to step up and start paying their own bills. It's the same thing, you know? I mean, just because during the marriage you had a certain breakdown of responsibilities doesn't mean that after the marriage is over, those same responsibilities are going to stay like that. So parents get to step up. Parents get to be the parents. I mean, people have an inherent right to their children. And so they're going to allow the courts to, have their children. Yeah. So,
although I've seen the opposite situation as well, where the parenting plan calls for one of the parents to have a certain time sharing with the children and they never exercise their parenting time. And I've had the other parent come in and say, I want to take them to court and force them, you know, have the judge force them to exercise their parenting time. And, you know, it's a hard thing to hear, but you cannot litigate someone into being a good parent. You cannot drag them into court and expect a judge to tell them, you better do this, or you better be a good parent, or you better exercise your parenting time. The judge may take away some of that parenting time if they're not exercising it, because that's not usually in children's best interest to expect mom or dad or someone to be coming to pick them up and they never show up. But they're not going to find someone in contempt for not exercising parenting time.
So, you know, that actually brings up a good point. One of the things that you kind of tacitly are saying there in that last statement is about what the judge will make somebody do or not do. And that's one of the points I definitely wanted to make in this show. And that is that the only person who has any power over another person is the judge. The lawyers can't order people to do things. You can't order people to do things. And that's the one thing that I find people really get frustrated about, especially early on in a case when maybe somebody's not providing their financial documents or they aren't paying something that they should be paying. Maybe they stopped paying a bill or a credit card or a mortgage. And I hear constantly, how can she get away with this? How can he get away with this? Can he get away with this? How's this happening? And
why can't you stop it?
Yes, you've done nothing to control his behavior. That's my favorite quote ever.
You've told me that story. I love that.
Yeah. So, it's really important that you understand that lawyers don't have the power to control that. The lawyer's power is in filing. The process is you file a motion. The motion just tells the court that you want something. The court usually doesn't do anything just based on the motion, because procedural
Almost
due
never.
Process dictates that you get notice and an opportunity to be heard. So you have to go in and have a hearing in front of the judge, and then the judge listens to both sides, gets evidence from both sides, and then the judge makes the decision and the judge renders an order. That's the power. That's the only way to control another person. Other than that, and if there's no case filed, there's nothing anybody can do.
No, not even a judge, because with no case filed, there's nothing to put in front of a judge. So, but the important note about that, and we've talked about this in other episodes, because people, okay, so you file the motion and you get in there and you tell the judge all of your facts and you present your evidence, and then lo and behold, the judge does not agree with you. And it is a mind blower for so many clients. But you have to understand, and we know this because we have seen this, and actually one of the things that we learned to do in law school, I'm sure you did this when you were in law school, Rebecca, where they have you get up and argue one side of a case and then go right over to the other podium and argue the other side of the case. And so we know as attorneys that no matter how good a case we put on, the other side is going to put on as good a case as they possibly can as well. And usually the judge falls somewhere in between what both sides want. You right. don't or, often get a judge
or
going
as much
all one
as
way.
You think your case is so strong. I as an attorney have always tried to gauge what to bring in front of a judge because I don't want to waste my client's money or time or the judge's time or my own credibility. And so I won't take something that's frivolous or I think is definitely a loser in front of the judge. But even with gauging that, you don't always win. It is a crapshoot. You know, the judges could be in a bad mood that day. They could just not like the way you look. They don't like the way you sound. They don't like what you're saying. They have their own biases as well. And so sometimes it doesn't go your way.
Never know. Never. And we know this. We have been in courtrooms for more years than we are going to admit. And we have seen, I have walked into courtrooms thinking that our case was, you know, I knew how it was going to end up and I should know better. I'm a professional. And I have walked out completely and utterly surprised. Or, you know, more realistically, 2 or 3 weeks down the road when we finally get the court order in the mail or emailed now.
Sometimes
these days,
it's two or three
completely
weeks.
Completely different. Yeah.
Sometimes it's months, depending on how long the hearing was. I mean, if it's, you know, if it's a one day hearing or, a long thing where judges have to now weigh lots and lots of evidence and or read memos of law and that sort of thing. I've waited 4 months for an order sometimes.
I mean,
so, you know, that's the other little nugget that people don't understand is that you can't force a judge to, hey, where's my order? I mean, you know, sometimes I'll have my paralegal send a little email going to the judicial assistant saying, hey, just checking in on the status of the order. Hope all is well and you're having a great day. Try to be
that
as nice
doesn't usually
possible.
Work, by the way, but we try it.
Yeah. So the judge is working on it.
Coming up, more from Rebecca and Susan on It's Not Fair, Divorce Law versus Divorce Justice.
In no way is this conversation about saying, oh, just lay down and give the other person everything they want. I mean, we're not saying that at all. Of course, go for what's fair.
We're going to take a quick break now to tell you about our new sponsor. We're really excited to be pairing with BetterHelp Online Counseling.
Is there something that's interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? BetterHelp Online Counseling is there for you.
You know, much like Breaking Free Mediation lets you work with your mediator online, BetterHelp Online Counseling also allows you to connect with a professional counselor in a safe and private online environment. It's really convenient.
You can connect via phone or video, chat, text, in any areas like depression, stress, anxiety, trauma, anger, grief. Anything you share is confidential, and you can start communicating in under 24 hours.
And best of all, it's truly an affordable option. Our listeners get a 10% discount off their first month with discount code BREAKINGFREE.
So why not get started today? Just go to BetterHelp.com/BREAKINGFREE.
That's BetterHelp.com/BREAKINGFREE.
Take a listen to our archive, where you can hear Rebecca and Susan discuss more topics on divorce in depth, such as how to get your revenge body, Dr. Carolyn Cedarquist.
Whole of a donut when I am stressed or depressed or feeling some sort of emotional upset is unbelievable. And I think a lot of our listeners are in that place. You know, you hear about people sitting on the couch with the tub of ice cream, and that's how you get over a breakup.
And now, return to today's show.
And I think that's, you know, that there's so much that people don't understand about how the actual legal process unfolds, you know, and one of the things I wanted to be sure of, because it, to talk about, because it sort of goes to that, it's not fair, which I have heard from, I think, almost every client over the 30 years that, you know, something is just, it's not fair. Right. I also hear from them, it's the principle of the thing. It's, they're going to fight for a point because it's the principle of the thing. And, you know, I had one case where we had a half day hearing and we were arguing over a stuffed singing frog and, oh, and a CD collection. And a CD, I mean, it was, you know, maybe 40 or 50 CDs. And honestly, it cost more than it would have been to replace every one of those CDs and buy a whole new sound system to have that half day hearing. But my client kept saying, it's the principle of the thing. And in the end, all it did was the judge said, she can keep the singing frog and you're going to split the CDs. One of you gets A through L and one of you gets M through Z. And that was it. That was after an entire half day hearing that cost thousands of dollars for both of the clients just in prep time. But the thing to remember, and I this is where I would like people to notice this or know something about that. Arguing for the principle of that not only cost that couple a ton of money, it raised the emotional difficulty of settling their case. They probably dragged that case on for another 6 months because of the animosity that came out of that hearing over a stuffed singing frog and some CDs. So not only did they spend thousands, but they spent more because in time, money, and effort, because that case took another much longer period of time because they were just both dissatisfied with how the hearing went. They both were expecting justice in that courtroom. And in the end, neither one of them won.
Well, and that's what generally happens. I mean, you never really feel satisfied at the end of a divorce, whether you went to court or you mediate. I mean, because you're not going to get all of what you want in either case. And by the way, even if you do go to court and you get all of what you want, the other side can appeal. And then it goes on even longer. And sometimes the order is what we call stayed during the course of the appeal, which means whatever wonderful justice you thought you got is just put on hold until the outcome of the appeal. And then you get to spend another 50 or 100 grand on an appeal. So, you know, it's not necessarily the wonderful thing that you thought you were going to get. Even if you win.
Well, and I think that's a good point. And people will, you know, also get an order. So you go to court, you get an order that one of the parties is supposed to pay for something. And then you leave the courtroom, you got your order, you go forth, and they don't pay it.
And oh, that's another thing. And how's it getting away with not paying the court order? So you finally got the order. You know, and how is she getting away with not going along with what she's supposed to do in the order? Well, now you have to go back to the judge, because remember, the only person who has any power is the judge.
The judge.
So now you have to go back to the judge. You have to file another motion. This time it's a motion for contempt or a motion to enforce or whatever.
Motion to compel.
Motion to compel. And, you know, ask for not only that they do the thing they're supposed to do, but now you're going to have to ask for attorney's fees and hope that you get them or some sort of sanctions. And sometimes you get your fees and sometimes you don't. I mean, you know, unfortunately, it's just not a perfect system. And that it can be very frustrating for people. So, you know, I think it's really important for people to understand that, you know, just yes, go for what you want, go for what's fair. In no way is this conversation about saying, oh, just lay down and give the other person everything they want. I mean, we're not saying that at all. Of course, go for what's fair. But what's fair under the law?
Keep what you think is fair in the realm of reasonable, right? Because what you always have to keep in the back of your head, although this is hard to do, is that a lot of what is driving your thought process is probably the high emotional content of what is going on. And
yeah,
so,
I mean, and I can understand a lot of times why people are upset. I mean, you know, those cases where, you know, I mean, I've talked about this before, but, you know, I've had spouses who made a lot more money than the other spouse. The other spouse, they, you know, had lost their job or whatever, and now it's been 5 years since they've worked, and they never really went along with the fact that the other person wasn't working. But now it's been 5 years and there's a huge discrepancy in income and it's a longer term marriage. There's going to be a spousal support claim. And a lot of people really think that's not fair because I never said that was okay. I told him to get a job or I told her to start working. And that's really hard for, it's a huge pill for people to swallow sometimes.
It's a huge pill, but it is a fact, right? The judge is going to the court. The law provides that you take the people essentially where they are as they are today at the time of the divorce, not what the two of you have been arguing over for the past 5 years in most cases. So the fact that your spouse has been unemployed for 5 years and does not have any income is what a judge is going to look at. What drags the case out is you thinking that's not fair. And so arguing or hoping that some other result is going to come out of it, right? And so that's where I'm saying, keeping in mind, I agree with Rebecca 100%. There's a lot of good reason to be upset going through a divorce. There are a lot of upsetting things that are happening, but you do yourself a disservice in the process when you allow those emotions to drive your, I'll call it your fairness, you know, meter. Because
I remember Nevin Sandley in one of our previous episodes had one of my favorite quotes when he said, "Emotions melt the fortune."
Yeah, he's so right.
And so, listening to your attorney, you know, when we say, you know, yes, be, you know, fight for what's fair, but be reasonable. Reasonable means within the realm of the law. So within the realm of the law, there will be a best case scenario and a worst case scenario, and then something in between there when you apply the law to the case. And that's where it's going to fall. You know, you can go to mediation and get something that's different than exactly what the law will provide. You know, if the moneyed spouse wants to pay half of that person's paycheck to the other spouse, they can do that. No court is generally going to make somebody pay half their paycheck to somebody. But you know, somebody can agree to do that if they want to.
That's one of the beauties of mediation, is that you can choose to do things that vary from the law. And you know, the idea of mediation is to try and help the two of you come up with a solution that is a win-win for both of you, gets you both as much of what you want, where certainly I would not say that is what a judge is looking to do, because a judge has to apply the law. But you know, I think in this situation, you know, one of the things that every client, I would say, over my many years of practice has heard from me is that you have to remember that your peace of mind has a dollar sign attached to it. And only you know what that dollar sign amount is. So it may be that you end up paying a little bit more or receiving a little bit less, but you always should be weighing the settlement negotiations and the proposals on the table against the idea that if you can come to a settlement, this process is over and you get to move on with your life. You get to, you will have made your decisions. You will be able to move forward, because when you're stuck in the divorce process, you're stuck in limbo. It's just this horrible, like, third phase of hell, like Dante talked about, you know, the rings of hell. Divorce limbo is definitely a ring of hell because you don't know.
Everything in your life is up in the air.
And
your entire life is up in the air. I mean, you know, I've had people who, you know, have been living at their dad's house, sleeping on the sofa because they don't want to go out and buy a house, or they don't want to go.
Or they can't. You're not allowed to go buy a house during a divorce.
Right. Or they don't even know if they're having to move to a different city because there's a relocation conversation going on. And so they can't. And, you know, and everything is up in the air as far as how much money you're going to have, if you're going to see your kids, how much you're going to see your kids, all that sort of stuff. So it is, it's very frustrating. And, you know, another area that I wanted to bring up that people often think isn't fair is when one person contributed a lot of money to a particular asset, or let's say there was a bank account that somebody inherited, and the majority of the funds in there are inheritance, but now you've commingled it with earnings, or you've commingled it with, you know, your Social Security payment or whatever. And now, in a lot of states, that's going to be considered a commingled asset, which means it becomes marital. You know, some states might let you trace it out, if you can trace it out. Sometimes it's really hard to do that.
More often than not, it's really hard to trace it out because people don't keep bank records going back that far. And these days, digitally, we can pull a lot together, but you will be amazed at how hard it is to go back and trace. And the burden is on the party who wants to do the tracing, who wants to claim that separate party is separate property. So, and a huge amount of time and effort gets spent on doing that.
Yeah. And so what I tell people, and I just had this conversation with a client last week, actually, one of my former clients who I had done her divorce, her husband, it was like $1,500 behind on paying for other things, not child support, but they have a pro rata split on extracurricular activities and medical payments and deductibles and things like that that don't go into the child support guidelines calculation. Sometimes people split it 50-50, sometimes it's 60-40, 70-30, whatever. But this guy owed her like $1,500. I told her she's going to spend more than that filing a motion to enforce, setting it for hearing, and going to a hearing. So, you know, it's frustrating for people because, you know, for a lot of people, $1,500 is a substantial amount of money. It's not a small amount of money, but, you know, you're going to have to go and spend probably $5,000 to get $1,500 back.
Right.
Sometimes you can ask for fees, especially if your agreement says, oh, the wronged party can get fees back. But sometimes judges go, well, I think that's too much in fees. It's not reasonable because they take a look at how much the fees were, and sometimes
or they just cut it back. Yeah, I mean, I actually have almost never seen a judge award the full amount of the fees for pursuing a contempt or something like that. I see it more as a slap on the wrist to the other side, but rarely do you see your entire attorney's fee being paid. And keep in mind, your attorney this is what they do for a living. They need to get paid while they're doing it. And it's not that you get your attorney's fees paid as the process is going along. So you're having to cover your attorney's fees during the process. You might get reimbursed if the court orders it, but rarely would it be that the judge at the beginning of the action, before there's been any determination as to, you know, any of this, that person has to be paying your fees in an ongoing fashion. So you're often funding these fees.
The attorney can't be the bank and basically lend you the money until you get paid back from, you know, and so the attorney's going to want to be paid throughout the entire process, and then maybe you'll be reimbursed. And so that's the frustrating part of it. And that's where we decided to have this show on divorce law versus divorce justice. We as attorneys often agree with you. It's not necessarily fair. And most attorneys do the very best that they possibly can to get you as much as you can, as much as we can, and as many fees as we can. But it's not, you know, we don't have magic wands either.
Yeah, no, I mean, we don't. And, you know, we're always fighting with that concept of, you know, trying to do the best that we can to argue for what our clients want, because our job is to be your advocate. Our job is to take what you want and go in and either negotiate with the other attorney for that or go to the judge and hopefully, you know, win that in a courtroom setting. But as Rebecca just said, you know, the law degree doesn't come with a magic wand. We can't change the law. We can't change the facts. We can only present them in the best light for our client that is possible. And, you know, we can only do so much. We are not going to be able to litigate your spouse or your soon-to-be ex-spouse into being a better person than they are, or right, the person that you want them to be.
And really the main reason why I've talked about this for years and why we wanted to do this show is to let you guys know, who, listeners out there, that, you know, don't spend lots and lots of money on things that your lawyer is telling you or the mediator is telling you isn't something that you should pursue, isn't a position that is, that's reasonable under the law. Try to take your emotions out of this as much as you can, and just listen to what, you know, whoever's advising you is telling you, whether it's your mediator, whether it's your lawyer, listen to what they're saying. And when they tell you that's not necessarily an argument that's going to fly, or, you know, yes, move forward with, you know, the motions if you need to, but be patient and understand that maybe somebody seems like they're getting away with something now, but, you know, until that motion can be filed, until you can get a hearing, until you can get in front of a judge and get a court order, you're not going to have that instant feeling of relief like you feel like you should.
Yeah. I mean, I think what we want you to know is that, bottom line, if you're going to be dwelling on the fact that the divorce proceeding is unfair and that you're not getting a fair deal in the settlement, then all that really does is drag out the process. It, you know, ends up lightening your bank accounts. Your attorneys will end up with more of your money. You will end up with less of it. Your spouse will also, but I don't think that's the result that you were looking for. If you're able to take that step back, take the advice of your attorney, or your mediator won't be giving you advice, but if what you're hearing is that a position that you're taking is not within the realm of reasonable, consider that you need to modify your thinking. Because in the end, the only way that you move on is to come to a settlement and to, or to have a judge make a determination for you. But bringing this to an end is the way that you get to move forward with your life. And I guarantee you will. How many times have you heard this from a client, Rebecca? Something that they fought for in the divorce that was so important to them, that was just so, they had to have it. And they come back a year later, or I have a conversation with them, and they can't believe that they made such an issue out of it. Or they can't believe, you know, their life has moved to such a different place that the minutiae and the detail of what was seemed so vitally important at the time of the divorce, it really didn't mean that much at all. And keep that in mind.
Yeah, definitely. And but, you know, clearly don't be a doormat. Yes, go for what's fair, but go for what's fair under the law. And then just be patient with the process. Because a lot of times in the law, it feels like hurry up and wait, hurry up and wait. And there is a waiting period. And that's the period that can make you crazy sometimes. But just understand that that is part of the process sometimes. So anyway, it's really important to understand that you will end up getting there and you will end up getting to a place where you can move on with your life, but you want to do it in a way that preserves your own peace of mind as much as you possibly can.
Absolutely.
Thank you for joining us today on Breaking Free, a Modern Divorce podcast. I'm Rebecca Zung.
And I'm Susan Guthrie. Breaking Free Mediation is proud to be the very first family law mediation centers in the country to offer a mindfulness track. Breaking Free Mediation, helping you resolve your family law matter peacefully. Learn more at www.breakingfreemediation.com.
Also, make sure to download your free calming meditation from renowned meditation and energy expert, Scott Picard, at www.breakingfreefromdivorce.com/free meditation.
Check back next Monday for our next edition of our powerful, inspirational, and educational podcast. And if you enjoyed today's podcast, please remember to give us a 5-star rating and let us know what you liked in a review on iTunes.
And remember, you're just one step away from your new life.